Why don't we get started with announcements? Is there anything that people would like to let everyone know is going on? Well, I will tell everybody, this is Tamara, that we did successfully submit a set of 7 sessions on climate literacy to the AGU meeting, covering pre-college activities, higher education, informal education, research and education, impact on religious groups and other kinds of communities. So I think we have a nice set of sessions. Well, so we will know in about a month if they were accepted or not. And then we will, with those that are accepted, we will start identifying speakers for these various sessions.
Great.
Well, congrats.
The other thing I can let everybody know is we had, as many of you probably know, NSF has decided not to continue funding NSDL, the National Science or STEM Digital Library, and the Clean Pathway Project is funded under that initiative. And there was a meeting last week on planning for the future of NSDL and how to keep that larger enterprise going. And so I'll update people more as more concrete plans are established. But it looks like we will most likely get our third year of funding, and there may be some transitional funds for existing projects. But I'll let people know as we find out more about that. Are there other announcements? Okay, well, if not, we can move on to our presentation for today. If for those of you who have not gotten them yet, the slides are on the website, so I'll give you a chance to go look. Kristen Poppleton and Emmy Fenton are going to speak to us today about the Will Steger Foundation and our work in climate literacy and the youth climate movement. Kristen is the education program manager for the Will Steger Foundation and first participated in their institutes and has now been teaching pre-K through graduate students and training formal and informal educators in environmental education and STEM. Abby Fenton is the Youth Programs Director of the Will Steger Foundation, and it looks like she began her efforts as part of some of their activities and has now been leading their Leaders Program, which aims to engage and empower youth through leadership on climate change and solutions. So with that, I will turn it over to Kristen and Abby, and hopefully everybody has their slides.
Thanks. Abby, I wanted to see if Abby was on yet.
I am.
Good. Hey, Abby.
Hi.
Abby's calling in from home, so wanted to make sure she was there. Well, great. Well, thanks for letting me and Abby speak a little bit today about our work. And I think what the presentation that I pulled together here, that we pulled together, is really an overview of who we are, just for those of you, I know you're all over the country and might not be as familiar with the work that we do. My focus is education, and Abby's focus is the youth program, and so those are the two areas that I'll dive into a little bit more deeply. Our policy work is done primarily by Will, our founder, and Nicole, our executive director, so I'll do a little introduction to that, but don't have as much to say about that, although Abby's work does directly tie in with that as well. And then if there's any questions after that, feel free to jump in. So great. So is everyone able to download slides and stuff? Do they have them in front of them?
Yep.
I have them.
Yes.
Yep.
Perfect. Okay, so moving to slide 2. So for those of you who don't know who Will Steger is, he's the founder of our foundation and the nonprofit sense of foundation. We're not a giving group of that gives. And he's a polar explorer that I'll talk about a little bit more in the next slide, but he founded the foundation in 2006 to really focus specifically on climate change education and climate change policy, and came to this really out of his years of exploring the polar regions. So it's always so awkward. Move to slide three. So like I said, for 45 years, Will has been exploring the polar regions, and really through that period of time became an eyewitness to the effects of climate change in the Arctic. And every ice shelf that he's crossed is disintegrated as a result of climate change. And he came to realize that this, what he'd seen and the images that he had were really a powerful way of presenting this issue, and started doing a series of eyewitness tours about what he'd seen, a presentation. And maybe some of you have, has anyone seen Will's presentation before? Anyone else?
Hi, this is Louise.
Louise, yeah. Louise has actually been to our institutes, too, so.
Well, and Will was the person that got me interested in polar science and totally changed my life. So this is really exciting to hear you guys talk about it.
Oh, Will. Oh, great.
Hi, Louise.
I saw the youth program when they came back from the Arctic with Branson at night.
Oh, perfect. Well, great. So so his presentations he has done locally, and people here in Minnesota are pretty familiar because Will is kind of a hometown hero, but he also has been done a lot of tours nationally, reaching people through his really nonpartisan presentation and his really unique message. And so the foundation is really founded, I guess, on this story that he has to share. But also, he's always been really good at connecting educators with his different expeditions and with environmental issues in general. And so bringing kind of those two pieces together, this eyewitness story and education, the foundation emerged out of that, like I said, in 2006. So moving on to slide four. And so the first few years of our existence, this expedition idea was really what we knew well and did well and used to kind of raise awareness about climate change and about as a way to connect teachers and youth and policymakers. And actually all the different expeditions really kind of centered around that theme. Our first expedition in 2007, which Abby Fenton, who's on the call with us, will be talking a little bit, she was actually on the expedition, gave a face to climate change. They met with Inuit people along the route and saw how, you know, the Arctic has changed. The Ellesmere Island expedition was with emerging leaders that were in their 20s and started bringing this idea of the power of youth voice and empowering youth to talk about this issue. And the Greenland expedition was similar. And then our Copenhagen expedition, taking this idea of expedition as a metaphor a little bit more, because it wasn't an expedition per se as far as going to the Arctic and exploring in that way, but it was an expedition to the climate talks in Copenhagen. And during that, I think Abby will talk a little bit more about that, but kind of building on to our work with the youth, taking a Midwest youth delegation to those talks and building up to that. And each of those expeditions have always been tied to our educational program through through what we call adventure learning, which is really bringing authentic learning experiences to classrooms via the internet, via curriculum that has been developed and via teacher trainings and classroom presentations. And so before each of these expeditions, there was an outreach component where we worked with a cohort of teachers at our summer institute, introduced them to a new set of lesson plans, curriculum that was support that expedition. And then throughout the expedition, there was video and audio dispatches back to those classrooms, or to anyone actually who wanted to engage with them, that were tied in with what the students and teachers were learning. And all of that now, those dispatches are available actually still on our website. And so if you do use any of our curriculum that we have, they're tied to certain video or audio pieces, and so you can enrich the learning a little bit by adding to that. And I'll talk more about that education piece in a bit. So that was the beginning years, and we've continued. I'm going to move on to slide 5 here. To use that idea, building on Will's eyewitness, his access, because he is well known, staff knowledge and expertise, and also really recognizing certain niches in climate change education and communication that can be filled. Three main program areas have really developed, and we've expanded from there. And that's our formal education program, which I would say is grades 3-18, our emerging leaders program, and then our policy, educating, empowering, and inspiring. So, moving on to the area that I am not as well-versed in. As I said, our policy program is really more facilitated by Nicole, our executive director, and Will himself. We aren't a lobbying organization. We aren't writing or recommending legislation, but we really focus on building grassroots support and creating that space for legislatures to be able to support certain legislation. And so, as you can see here, our goal is to form consensus and alignment among key constituencies. And we do that through slide 7. Different activities, ensuring that we have strong climate and energy policy, advising elected officials on climate solutions. Will's eyewitness to global warming community forums and tours, that's really working at a grassroots level, informing and the public and making the constituency, you know, really aware of the issue. Lobby days with emerging leaders, Abby will talk more about that. And then protecting the state and federal laws that we have through public outreach and partnerships. And some of our accomplishments from this particular angle, on to slide 8. Our biggest one, which I wasn't around at this point, but I'm always very proud of, and it's unfortunate that it's not being supported anymore, but initially, when the foundation was just starting, Will was doing his eyewitness tours around the state and presented testimony before the House and Senate in January of 2007, and the presentation kind of rippled through the state government, and through that, in February, the governor signed the strongest renewable energy mandate that was in the country at the time, requiring 25% renewables by 2025, and we called that the Next Generation Act. And unfortunately, since that time, you've probably seen that our former governor is running for president, and he's really recanted all of this support that he put behind this act at the time. But at the time, it was, and it's still enacted, although not necessarily being supported. So this was really based around talks with the governor And with the eyewitness tours, there was a constituency of the state that was really concerned about the issue. And then these are some of our partnerships that we have. And REAMP is one that Abby will talk a little bit more about as well. So that said, and if people have questions, I won't be able to talk as much about policy, but this is informal presentation, so please feel free to jump in. All right, education, something I can talk about. So our education program is, like I said, I would think of it more, this is slide 9, as more a grades 3-18 education program, based on the grades and the audience that we serve. And we offer curriculum developed here by the foundation on our website. It's free for download. Professional development opportunities, mostly in the form of our Summer Institute for Climate Change Education. Because we're a fairly small organization, we really thrive and work to develop educational partnerships. And so these different collaborations kind of help us broaden our reach. So we have always a number of those going on at one time that we're juggling and trying to be a part of. And then, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, our online resources on our website. Moving to slide 10, just to give you a little bit more background on our what we offer on our website, we have actually online curriculum focused on Arctic communities, and that looks at the living communities of the Arctic, including humans and then animals and plants, and the impacts of climate change there. We have what's called our Educator Resource Binder, which within it has a 3 through 6 and a 6 through 12 lesson plan unit, which is really focused on climate change basics. We have a 9 through 12 lesson plan unit focused on climate change solutions, and that was developed before Copenhagen and introduces students to what's geoengineering, how does an international climate consensus actually occur. The stabilization triangle game is a part of that. Give students the opportunity to form position letters based on what they learn. And and then also in that binder, you can order, or actually you can download each of these individually, but you can also get the binder itself. There's supplements from each of the expeditions that kind of go with them. And then finally, right now our big project that is consuming my life is our Minnesota's Changing Climate Curriculum, which is coming this summer. It's just all my reviews just came in the last couple of weeks, and so I'm starting to incorporate those. But it's 4, 6, 7, 8, and 9, 12 set of 6 lessons that are introduce students to Minnesota's biomes, the impacts of climate change, and developing action projects. And all of these really are bringing up action solutions-based, always ending with what can you do, empowering students really based on that idea that, students need to be aware of what is climate change, but if you don't offer them some hope, some solutions, some way for them to involve themselves in some way, then I think there's basically disengagement that occurs right away. They're all aligned with national standards, they're all very interdisciplinary. The grades 3 through 6 unit is actually a language arts-focused curriculum focused on persuasive communication and how do you communicate about an issue. All right. Moving on to slide 11. As I mentioned, professional development is a piece of our education program as well, and we have summer institutes every summer. Since we begun, we're doing our 6th annual summer institute this summer, and our institutes have been 5 days to 1 day in length, depending on themes, and they've ranged from the first year putting a human face on to climate change to our Copenhagen year focusing on global climate solutions. And we love to bring in speakers that have something to contribute to that. So I've included some of them there. Jim Hansen spoke 1 year. Bill Kibben came. And last year we had Dr. Oreskes who helped us understand this idea of climate misinformation, and we talked about dealing with that in the classroom. And in addition, we have every fall offered through Hamline University an online course. It's a 2-credit course on teaching climate change in the classroom. And then we offer conference workshops. Moving to slide 12, educational partnerships. And here's just kind of a idea of our who we work with and who helps us get our name out there. NEA has been a huge supporter of ours over the years. We're currently working, moving on to slide 13. The National Park Foundation also has become a pretty big partner of ours the last year. Their most recent electronic field trip to the North Cascades focused on climate change, and we were provided the lessons that supplemented the learning for that. And we're currently working with them on another project that I'll talk about in a second here. And then moving on to slide 14, we also offer, like I said, our website is a ton of online resources. Our blogs, we have an education blog that I write, Climate Lessons, as well as Abby has a youth action blog, and we have On the Road with Will Steger when Will's on the road. And I encourage you to check those out from our website. And I'm 2 slides away from you, Abby. moving on to our current education projects. Like I mentioned a little bit earlier, our big one right now is focused on Minnesota, and that's because it was funded through our Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is legislatively constitutionally dedicated funds for environmental and education and research projects. And we were very lucky to receive that funding, not this year, last year. All the funding this year that had the words climate change in it was actually cut from suggested funding. So we were lucky to put our application in for it last year. And our training, the funding is covering the curriculum that I mentioned earlier, our summer institutes, action projects for students, and then an online classroom. We'll talk about that in the next slide. And then the other big project, which actually ties in with it, is our Parks Climate Challenge that the National Park Foundation is funding this year, and that is supporting 5 trainings at 5 different national parks around the country that are focused on engaging students and teachers on climate change impacts in parks and connecting them back to their parks through different action projects. And the parks that are involved with that are the Tremont Institute at Great Smoky, Nature Bridge, which is in California, which is Santa Monica and Golden Gate National Recreation Area, North Cascades National Park, and then here in St. Paul, the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area. And so as a part of our trust fund project, we're actually leveraging those projects and kind of fusing them together, creating a small cohort of teachers. We'll have 100 teachers at our training this summer, and 20 of them will be focusing more specifically on the Mississippi and receiving grants to do action projects at their school. So moving on to slide 16, this is just basically our recruitment for our institute this summer, and the project in general, which I've talked pretty much about. I did want to say a little bit more about the online classroom piece. We're pretty excited. We've always had resources on our website, but we've never had a piece, I think, that's so formally developed as this, and we've been working with Hamline Center for Global Environmental Education to develop a site that helps bring pieces of the lessons that I've written to life. And so students that visit it will be able to explore Minnesota's four biomes a little bit more deeply. There's panoramas that they'll click around. They'll be able to learn about different species, different climate impacts on those areas, and also examples of journals from different folks that have explored those parts of the country, of the biomes, I should say. There's also videos that we've been doing interviews with different scientists in the state that are doing research in those biomes on climate change, and videos will be a piece of that as well. As well as Will's journals and the idea of his becoming an eyewitness, asking students to also become an eyewitness. And in addition, there's a social network option that's fairly simple, but we're encouraging the teachers that are involved with the project to ask their students to upload photos of their observations and journal entries from what they're doing, and then examples of the different projects that they do at their school. So, Abby, are you there?
I am.
Yay.
I'm waiting in the wings here. You ready for me?
Yeah. I'm so glad you guys get to hear two voices today. You're lucky.
Well, thanks for inviting me on. So I'm looking at slide 17 here, just to make sure everyone's with me. And as Kristen said, I came on board with the Wilt-Seeger Foundation in 2006 as a member of the Baffin Island Expedition, which was a three-month dog-sled expedition to the Canadian Arctic. And yes, one of the most challenging experiences of my life, as you can imagine. And I still have all my fingers and toes, which I'm glad to report. But I came on board as an education coordinator for that program. And, you know, our main goal, as Kristen mentioned, was really to move people with the story and the human connection of the reality of the impact of climate change on the people living in the Arctic, who, of course, are contributing such a small, almost minuscule amount to the world's carbon outputs. And to really draw attention to that story and move people to engage in the issue of climate change through that lens. But when we came off the trip in April 2007, we really came into a whole different landscape. And as you may remember, Al Gore's The Inconvenient Truth had just come out, and there was a whole kind of opening on the dialogue of climate change in the media that was happening around the country. And everyone was suddenly talking about this. It's funny to think about 2007 in contrast to right now, because in some ways it was more of like an open, I think, dialogue than context that we're living in right now. But so we realized we needed to kind of shift our tactic and not just educate on the reality of climate change, but start talking about solutions. And not just teach people about solutions, but actually empower people to take action themselves, that people were really hungry for that. And that if we didn't provide that opportunity and door and access, then we were going to lose a lot of people because climate change is pretty heavy duty and, you know, really overwhelming. So that out of that kind of decision grew this Emerging Leaders Program, which also came out of some strategic thinking and looking at, you know, the Asia report had just come out. We said, wow, we have this small window of time to really make a difference on doing whatever we can to lower our carbon emissions. Who out there can we mobilize to really get this done? Who's not already doing something? And then, you know, there's a lot of people that need to be mobilized, but we really looked at the Generation Y demographic, which is, generally speaking, ages 15 through 25, youth that are coming of age and becoming new voters. And we thought, wow, you know, everyone is trying to sell something to this generation, right? I mean, why can't we sell them on climate change? You know, imagine if, like, this incredible, the largest baby boom since the baby boomers all took up this issue as their cause and went out there and made a lot of noise and really took action. What a difference that would make. And after doing a little more research, we realized, oh, there is this generational groundswell afoot, that there already is this movement among this generation. It exists, it's alive, it's vibrant. And so our Emerging Leaders Program is aimed at educating and inspiring and engaging this generation, really supporting the work that they're already involved in, and helping them, you know, be even more effective on a local, regional, and a national, international scale. And at the core of our program are the core values of youth leadership. So it's not us in front of them. We're really behind them, and they're taking the lead. It's peer mentorship, pairing high school students with college students, college students with college students, and having youth teach each other. Ownership, where youth really feel like they own the direction of the programming, and they're really shaping the movement that they're involved in. Justice and collaboration. Those are the core values of our Emerging Leaders Program. And if you move to slide 18, though we have this broad focus of local, national, local, regional, national, international, which is huge, I'll acknowledge, we really drill down on two specific areas, and that is working very locally here in Minnesota and also taking a regional approach across the upper Midwest. And then through that, we engage those youth, our Minnesota and Midwest youth, in national opportunities and international opportunities. So I'm not sure if any of you have heard of our Yeah Minnesota program, but we launched that in 2007, and it's based here in the Twin Cities, and it's a network of Minnesota high schools and students from environmental clubs from about 25 high schools, private, public, charter. We have a youth steering committee made up of about 8 students and 6 or 8 schools, and those students plan 4 large events over the course of the school year where they do outreach to their peers. We host it at a different school every time, and they educate their peers on different themes that we select at the beginning of the school year, which could be energy efficiency, it could be renewable energy, food sources, sustainable agriculture, policy, climate policy, and how to talk to your legislators, environmental justice. So we kind of choose these 4 themes. And then we also have other events that we bring our youth into. We have a lobby day that we collaborate with MPIRG and Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and where we actually teach students how to go and lobby their legislators, and then they go and do that if they want on climate-related issues. And we have an Earth Day event that we do every year. This year it's in partnership with the Sierra Club and NAACP in support of the Clean Air Act. And just a wide variety of other opportunities for leadership and exposure and education. And so that's our local high school program. And what's exciting about the high school piece is that it dovetails really nicely with the work that Kristen does in our K-12 program area. And I think it really provides kind of a holistic approach to reaching young people. Not only are we educating them through the climate content in our curriculum and empowering teachers to really deliver this factual information, but we're also then helping them take action so that they don't feel just overwhelmed by the information. They actually feel like there's something that they can do and really cultivate that citizen engagement. The other hat that I wear and the other main thrust of our programming is through our collaboration with the REAMP Network. And I'm curious, is anyone here familiar with REAMP?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of you? Okay. Well, just real briefly, REAMP is a network of over 125 foundations and nonprofits working collaboratively across the upper Midwest on climate policy. And they have a goal of reducing carbon emissions in the Midwest by 80% by 2050. So pretty ambitious. But they've had some really large successes and have helped shut down over 20 coal plants in the Midwest since, geez, I would say over the past 6 years. And they have 5 focus areas, which are coal, transportation, clean energy, renewable energy, and global warming solutions, which is more aligned along the lines of cap and trade. So they're really interested. You know, they've identified their key allies, and youth is one of them. They're aware that there is this generational investment in climate change solutions and this youth movement out there. And so they have funded me through the Will Steger Foundation to really be the liaison between this vibrant Midwest youth climate movement and this really amazing collaboration between nonprofits and foundations. And what that often looks like is me supporting emerging statewide networks across the Midwest, supporting projects like the Beyond Coal campaign that the Sierra Club has launched on college campuses, largely working with college students and young alumni. But there have been some fun opportunities to actually engage our high school students with college students around some of the activism, which is just, for the high school kids, like, blows the lid off, you know, the top. It's, like, really amazing. And, of course, these youth are really, the college youth are doing incredible things, like starting their own nonprofits and writing grants for, you know, $3,000, $50,000, $100,000 and getting them. I mean, they're really doing amazing things. So I really try and get behind them, support their work, and then connect them with the resources that REAMP provides and help, you know, foster this collaboration, this cross-generational collaboration.
What does REAMP stand for?
REAMP, you know, it has outgrown its acronym.
What is the acronym exactly?
You know, I think it's...
REA?
It's REAMP.
Oh, okay.
REAMP, and I think it used to stand for, like, realignment mapping something, and it's outgrown that. But they're so branded that they're still REAMP. Mm. So, but if you're interested in Midwest policy, I would definitely go to their website, REAMP.org. They have a really phenomenal online newsletter that goes out and just are a pretty, it's just, they provide a really exciting model of what we all could be doing as nonprofit organizations in terms of avoiding being siloed and sharing resources. So you can take a look at that. Moving on to slide 19, I just wanted to highlight some of the accomplishments and kind of highlights of our program, Emerging Leaders Program Area, over the past 3 years here, 3 or 4 years. We've had some pretty exciting collaborations with our elected officials, and locally here in Minnesota, Kristen, I believe, mentioned some collaboration with Governor Plenty back in the day. I don't think we could, like, pay him enough to meet with Will Seeger right now. But I believe it was 2008, we had a youth forum with 400 Minnesota students, high school and college, from across the state, Governor Plenty and Will Seeger, which was really, really unbelievable to talk about climate change solutions. And we had 5 youth up on stage with the governor and Will. And the governor shared his vision, Will shared his, and the youth shared theirs. It was really exciting. We got a lot of press out of that, and the audience pressed the governor pretty hard on some of his suggestions. And then out of that, we actually created an opportunity to meet with the governor's chief of staff and a small select team of youth to kind of continue that dialogue, which is exciting. Then at the end of 2008, we did the longest summer tour with Will Seeger, and we actually took 2 Priuses and myself, and we went and toured colleges and universities all across the upper Midwest. And Will did his eyewitness presentation. I talked about youth leadership, and we just really broadened our relationships with youth in the Midwest, which was really important in terms of our growing our visibility and connections. But I think for us, one of the real turning points was Expedition Copenhagen. And Kristen mentioned this and how it was sort of a play on our theme of really going to the front lines of climate change. And this time, instead of going to the Arctic, we took it to the International Climate Negotiations in Copenhagen. And we brought a delegation of 10 Midwest youth leaders there from colleges across the upper Midwest and did extensive training on media and public speaking and organizing. And they were just unbelievable, not only as ambassadors for the Midwest, but also ambassadors for the youth climate movement, and helped bring the story back to the Midwest of the importance of this federal climate bill, which, of course, as we know, did not pass. But that was a really powerful experience for us, and each one of our team members was paired up with a nonprofit mentor from the REAMP network, including NRDC, the Sierra Club, National Wildlife Federation, so there was some really wonderful collaborations there. And then in 2009, through my role with REAMP, I was able to kind of be a liaison and help REAMP identify 7 youth organizations across the Midwest that received funding through the REAMP Global Warming Strategic Action Fund, anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000 each, which is really significant for these student-run initiatives on the ground in the Midwest. And it was really exciting for us to play a part in that. And then most recently, we had a youth forum with Whistler and Governor Dayton in defense of the Next Generation Energy Act in Minnesota, which some of you may be aware of. And part of that is this, there's an effort to lift the ban on new coal plants. And students really wanted the governor's support on that, and we were able to secure a meeting with him for them to voice their concerns and give them that access, which was really important. And then just last weekend, I got back from Power Shift. And has anyone heard of the Power Shift Youth Summit?
Yeah.
But if you haven't, yes, thank you. That's how I feel. Right. Okay, if there's anyone on the call that's not familiar with Power Shift, please, please, please Google Power Shift 2011. You can go to powershift2011.org. And it's put on by the Energy Action Coalition, which is a youth-run organization. 10,000 young people descended on D.C. April 15th through 18th. And there were incredible speakers, including Al Gore, Van Jones, Bill McKibben, among many others. There was a nonviolent direct action training. There was a massive lobby day on the Hill in defense of the Clean Air Act. There was a huge grassroots mobilization training. So all these things, you know, this just, I'm telling you this because I just want to, for those of you that aren't aware of this youth climate movement, just the scale that it's at. 10,000 young people, and actually they asked the folks in the room, and we had everyone, all 10,000 people in one room, to stand up who had ever been to a previous Power Shift, and very few people stood up. So almost all those 10,000 are new recruits. There's been two other Power Shifts in 2007, 2009. I thought that was really very exciting. So it's growing. Really growing exponentially. And it's exciting for us to play a role in that, in engaging Midwest youth as leaders and really messaging why the Midwest is a critical part of climate solutions, not only for our heavy carbon output, but also our resources in terms of wind and agriculture and reindustrialization potential. So we have a picture of our Expedition Copenhagen team here in slide 20, which we're very proud of. It really unbelievably articulate youth. And if you want to see some of their videos, if you're interested in how we're messaging the Midwest as a critical part of this national solution on climate change, there's some really wonderful videos on our website that you can look at. And then slide 21 is a picture of our Yale, Minnesota high school delegation that came to Power Shift. And they actually led a workshop, and 50 students attended, mostly high school kids from all over the country in a pretty diverse intersection. There were a lot of kids of color in there, and kids that were new to activism and some that were a little more involved already. But for most of our kids, it was the first time they'd ever been to D.C., certainly the first time they'd ever attended a rally.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really powerful and transformational. So it was pretty wonderful to be able to facilitate some of that for them. And then my last slide here is 22, and it just is a glance at some of our local partners, including the Sierra Club, the Mississippi Watershed Management Organization, the Minnesota Energy Challenge, which some of you may be familiar with, and then some of our national, regional and national partners, including REAMP and 350.org. And there's a whole host of youth organizations I could have added on here, too, but you can go to our website and investigate a little more on that front. And I'm just kind of trying to keep my eyes on the time here. So, Kristen, do you want to kind of close with the last slide?
Yeah. Thanks, Abby.
Yeah,
in our last slide, like as you can see, I don't have to really explain much of it, but just if you want to learn a little bit more, obviously we're here, you can ask some questions now too, but our website is a great place to go, and we do have a Facebook page, so become a fan and follow us on Twitter and read our blogs, and that's the Will Seeger Foundation.
So, I'll just add this too. Kristen put a plug in for our blogs. It's not just Kristen and I blogging, even though I will say Kristen is a fabulous blogger, if you haven't figured that out already. But one thing I'm trying to do with the Youth Action blog is actually feature the youth voice on there. So we have high school and college students blogging all the time about the work that they're doing. So if you're ever feeling like pretty down about all this climate change business, read these Youth Action blogs because they're incredibly energizing. And pretty wonderful. I just wanted to put a plug in for that.
Yeah.
So thank you. This is Tamara. How is the Will Seeger Foundation funded?
Grants and private donations.
Private donations from foundations or?
From people that give us donations, right, Abby?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're a nonprofit. We exist like any nonprofit. So right now, our big source of funding is through this Natural Resources Trust Fund. That's going to our big project there.
And the REAMP. My funding for my position is all through REAMP, which is Rockefeller Foundation, Garfield Foundation, Joyce Foundation, so Energy Foundation. But we also have, we actually have a lot of diverse funding sources, so we have a lot of private individuals that have, a long history with Will Steger, and they really believe in our work, and then we have some legislative funding also for Kristen's position.
Right.
To the Minnesota State.
And we got a little bit from the History Center this year through our Legacy Fund, it's called. It's another state funding source, but we're constantly writing. We're a nonprofit that's writing grants all the time.
And your climate lessons are, I went online and took a look. It looks like that they're all. Do you have a individual URL for each lesson, or is it all just one big document?
For our lesson plans?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you should be able to download. Yeah, so that is something for CLEAN. I had discussed with someone at one point. When I have time, I'd love to do this. At this point, you can download the entire PDF of each set of lessons, and there's 5 to 6 lessons in each of our curricula.
Okay.
So they're not broken out. I mean, you can break them out individually and do them individually, and based on some of our rudimentary surveying we've done, we're quite sure that most teachers are doing, a lesson here or a lesson there, but they are not broken up. And I know that's one of the reasons when I originally had asked CLEAN if they could review it, they said they didn't have the capacity at this point to look at a full unit like that.
Right.
Right.
We will ultimately have a review criteria for full curriculum, but right now we need individual lessons or individual pieces of lessons. We're expanding in that area also.
And I have that GAPS email in my to-do list, because I know we have some that I could send in to, fill in those gaps. It's just, like I said, it's me.
Yeah.
Just
okay,
me.
No, I understand. I understand. Are there any other questions?
All right.
I'm looking. I just want to make sure I'm in the same place all of you guys are. I went to the Will Steger Foundation.org website, and I'm in the curriculum section. Is that the section we were just talking about, Tamara?
To download
the educator. Yeah. I was looking at the educator binder. Is actually what I was looking.
Yeah. So if you go to our there's a number of different ways to get there. On our front page, our first page, under programs, you can go to our K-12 education program. You can also scroll down on that first. Okay, well, you can also scroll down on the first page and hit Educator Resource Binder.
Ah.
And then there's a blue, it says get a copy of your resource binder, and you can click on that, and you fill in your name, and below it says choose format, because we like to track who's using who's using it, and you can do direct download. And that'll take you to a page that you can select which you would, if you only want to download our grades 3 through 6-1, for example, or you can download everything. And I'd love to, maybe in the fall when our online classroom is done with our new project, especially that email that was sent out this morning about the Colorado thing, I think this rising group of people getting back down to teaching about the issue locally is really exciting and interesting. And so we have something going on in Wisconsin right now similarly to the Wiki project, but I'd love to share that resource once it's done in August as well.
Anyway. Okay, well, are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for letting me talk a little bit about what we do.
Yeah, the presentation will continue to be posted, and we'll have the recording will be posted along with it, so others can listen, or you can go back and check out something else if you that you think you missed.
Great.
All right, thanks a lot. Well, we will talk again next week.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.